Hi there, I'm Louis Nichols, and you're listening to the Sales for Founders interview series, where each week you can learn all of the sales skills you need to find your first customers and grow a profitable business. Directly from the mouths of some of the most successful founders and sales experts out there. This week, I'm super excited to talk to Lynn Tai. Lynn's one of my favourite founders. She's had a crazy career path. She left a life in academia to work at HomeJoy. Then she taught herself to code and worked as a contractor. And now, finally, she's founded her own company, Key Values, after 2 years and with zero sales experience. Lynn's grown Key Values to hundreds of thousands of dollars of yearly revenue, and there's so much we can learn from her journey, how she made those first sales and turned Key Values into a profitable business so quickly. We're going to dive straight into the sales stuff today. But if you want to find out more about Lynn and Key Values, then I really, really recommend you check out her interview with Cortland Allen on the Indie Hackers podcast. Anyway, Lynn, hey, it's great to have you here today. How's it going?
Hi, excited to be here.
Okay, so I want to do a couple of quick fire questions. I do this with everybody just to kind of warm us up and
get
into the sales stuff. Kick off with an easy one, which is, it's spring now. Do you have a favorite spring recipe?
Like to eat?
Yeah.
Oh, I guess I'm, it sounds kind of gross now that I'm saying it all, but I really like these mango spinach smoothies. I'm making them every day. It gets me my greens and I don't know. It's like green smoothies, my thing.
Okay. Fair enough. Awesome. Okay. Next question. So you worked at a startup for a while. You were in academia for a while.
Before that, yep.
Yeah. And now it's been, I think, 2 years that you've been running Key Values.
Yeah. It's fun. I started thinking about it at the end of March in 2017. So yes.
Okay. It's been 2 years. So yeah. What's your favorite thing about running your own business?
Ooh, a couple of things. I think the classic one that everyone always hears is that you have a lot of freedom. I mean, I think that's why a lot of people get into entrepreneurship in the first place. You get to like build your own little world, set your own rules. But I actually think my real answer is how many cool people I've met because of Key Values. For you, for example, we met on Indie Hackers, but I never would have been on Indie Hackers unless I was really starting something of my own. And yeah, I've met so many cool people. So I think that's my favorite part.
That's a nice answer, I bet. I bet you're one of the few people who would say that. I think most people would go for the freedom or the no boss or, yeah, that's a nice one.
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, when you do stuff that you like and you put it out there, it's almost like this hack where all the people who like that reach out, mm-hmm. you know, and then it's like instantly you just connected with a bunch of people who are excited about things that you're excited about, and that's pretty rad, you know?
Yeah, I see that, yeah.
Okay, next question.
No problem. Okay, so third question. You are a technical founder.
Mm-hmm.
You know a lot of other technical founders as well. From Indie Hackers, Cortland, all other kind of different places, I guess. You went through YC. Mm-hmm. What do you think is the biggest sales mistake or the biggest kind of fallacy around sales that you see technical founders making?
Oh man, so many. I think the one that I made also, I think that there's just this idea that you can just set up self-serve. You can just like build a bunch of things that are make your product really cool. And then people will just line up with their credit cards and they'll just help themselves. And I think that this is partially because technical founders know that they can build out this process and like, I don't know, streamline this. But I also think it's just probably it's stereotypically true that technical folks don't want to talk to people. So I think that's like a big mistake. And I mean, obviously it depends on what kind of sales you're doing, but for anything B2B or enterprise, like you really have to, it can't be self-serve. That's my opinion. And I avoided it for a long time too. I remember when someone suggested I do sales calls and I was like, what? That's going to take me forever. I'm going to spend all my time doing these sales calls. And it does take a lot of time, but it also was like a light switch. It was like a flip of a switch that I started actually making money. So
yeah.
yeah, probably the wanting to avoid doing actual sales.
Okay, fair enough. And final question is there a sales tactic, a sales meme that you, an annoying one that you wish would disappear?
Meme?
Or like a sales tactic, something. So like my one is I hate when people say, can we jump on a call in email?
Oh, kind of interesting. It's funny that you say that because I actually do that. I suggest we jump on a call. Yep. I was going
to
say,
there are people who have a filter to delete those emails automatically.
Well, I think that when it's cold outreach is funny. So when someone sends that to me and I've never heard of them, I've never talked to them and they assume, I agree. It's like kind of, it's definitely off-putting that they think I want to spend time talking to them at all in the first place. So I agree with that. I always suggest it after someone has already expressed interest in wanting to learn more. Mm-hmm. So actually maybe I would agree with you that the cold outreach jump on a call. I think my thing that bothers me the most is when people say like, oh, I'd love to treat you to a 20-minute coffee. I'm like, what? Like, first of all, 20 minutes is a really, it's just a strange thing. Like it takes 20 minutes to get anywhere anyway. So yeah. So maybe that's probably, I agree with you on that.
Yeah. It's those phrases that I meant, like, obviously you can ask someone for a call, but it's the phrase, like the actual wording of it. Can we jump on a call? It's just.
Now I feel self-conscious if I ever say that, but I sometimes do say that.
I do. I say it as well. It's the worst part. There's no better way of saying
it. Very evil.
Jump on a quick call.
Yeah. I think the other thing is when people, I just really don't like cold outreach emails that are clearly templated. Like I know for a fact that they don't know who I am. They've never looked into what I do. And I know that 1,000 other people receive that email. But in a weird way, I also kind of appreciate it because it makes me feel like it's okay if I just immediately archive it. Like I don't even respond. I just archive. It gives me permission to just archive those.
Okay, fair enough. Great. So let's dive in. You are the founder of Key Values.
Yep.
And you basically, it's not a job board. Can you maybe tell us what it is?
Yeah, it's, I would say it kind of straddles employer branding in a jobs board. But it's basically a website where software engineers can visit and select the values that they care most about and find out which engineering teams share those values. And then it's more than a jobs board because I spend a lot of time working with directly and closely with each engineering team to not only articulate their values, but I really view it as my job to ask all those tough questions that all prospective candidates want to ask, but either, you know, don't have the opportunity to ask or they don't feel comfortable asking in an interview setting. It really just helps kind of match people with teams that share their values.
Yeah, it's a good description. I'm sure you've had to say it like 1,000 times.
I was just thinking that I kind of change it up every time and I'm always like, how did I like that one?
Because you get bored of your own way of saying it. It's just for you.
Just freestyle it.
Fair enough. Okay, great. So it's a two-sided marketplace basically, mm-hmm. right? You have developers on the one side and you have companies who are your customers.
Correct.
On the other side. So we'll talk more about the company side of stuff, the acquisition. Can you kind of take me back to, it must have been pretty much 2 years ago the first time we talked. I think we talked just after you posted about it on Indie Hackers.
Really? Yeah. Wow, we go way back, huh?
It's a while. Can you take me through really quickly how you kind of got those first companies on board?
Yeah, so I was self-conscious about saying this because I know the advice is always like charge early. Mm-hmm. I did not do this and I still am like forming my opinion about whether or not other people should start charging early or not, but I basically did not start charging for Key Values until about a year in. So all the companies that first got onto Key Values were actually like, they didn't pay anything. It was a free service. And even then it was still hard to get companies to commit because, you know, hadn't even launched my site. I hadn't even built my site really. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of risky for anyone who's really busy to spend any amount of time with someone who might not, like it might never come to life. So in the beginning, it was just honestly a lot of persistence and asking, calling in favors of favors, you know, any friend that I knew that worked at a company, like asking if they could intro me, and if they didn't follow up, if I'd ask them again, if they could maybe bring it up casually during lunch to them, like, oh, what happened to your conversation with Lynn, you know? And then, yeah, eventually, very slowly over many months, I had 22 companies when I officially launched in September of 2017. And then, yeah, even still after that, the only difference was after that, a lot of companies started reaching out. So it was mainly inbound, but it was still free. And then when I started charging, this was probably a little more than a year ago. It was also quite a struggle. And I think my mistake there was I was asking companies who were already on Key Values free, you know, who were already on for free, trying to convert them into paying customers. Actually Christine Spang of Nihilist, she had like mentioned this to me offhand when we spoke. She was like, just so you know, Lynn, it's going to be really hard to convert, you know, people who have been using your service for free into convincing them to pay. And I was like, yeah. I felt like the same thing to me because I thought it'd be easier because they've used your product. They know the value. Some of them have already seen success and have good feedback, but it's really true that it's hard to do that. And so I think I spent too much time early on when I was starting to charge, trying to convert free customers into paying ones instead of just have onboarding all new customers as paying ones. So that was something that I definitely wish I really understood, like took her advice to heart at the time. But yeah, and then it was just, I think the hard part was just price testing and figuring out the right way of doing the sales pitch. Like I'd never done sales before. I was definitely making it up as I went. It's come a long way.
Yeah, sure. So let's get back to those really early days. Because okay. I think a lot of people, when they're just starting out, they'll hear this like, okay, so I started at nothing. And then after a few months, I had 20. Okay, they weren't paying yet, but they were 20 who you kind of reached out to and you'd got them interested and they were on the platform and everything was working fine. Like over a couple of months. Can you maybe break that down a tiny bit more?
Yeah, of course.
How many people, like, because a lot of people, they hear that and some of them will, like, they won't really, they'll be doing their own thing and finding it really difficult and they won't really understand like, okay.
No, you're so right.
How am I gonna change between here and in a couple of months, right?
Yeah, and I was just going to say, even after the Indie Hackers podcast with Cortland, I thought I went over this, but a few people emailed me asking like, I was like, oh, I thought I answered this. But I mean, it was really just sitting down, identifying which companies I'd like to reach out to, seeing who I knew at those companies to see if there's an intro, because that it's at least a warm intro rather than reach, like, you know, cold outreach to a founder or CTO usually goes nowhere. And then of course, then making it as easy as possible for them to make that intro. And so, you know, if you have a friend or someone that you used to work with working at a company that knows, like, even if they know someone loosely, write the email for them, write the draft. Mm-hmm. And I think that the pitch then to me was like, I know that I look at their jobs board. I know that you're looking to hire engineers. I can safely assume that everyone hiring engineers is struggling because mm-hmm. it's hard to do. And just saying like, would love to help you for free to kind of tell your story and pitch engineers and kind of help promote your company to all the engineers that I know that are looking for jobs for you, like free of charge. There's no strings attached. This is what is required. And at the time, I think I was saying like, I said 30 minutes at first, but I found out it's too short. So then I started saying like a 60 minute call. It's an interview. You don't need to prepare anything at all. And of course I'm saying this in long form, but I think I just try to make short bullet point, like keep the blurb small, short. I think I probably experimented also like first make the intro, then I'll follow up with all these details. But the point is like you want to make it as painless as possible and reduce the amount of friction for people to get on board. And over time, like I really just ironed out all the details and it was like, yeah, I'll do a short interview. You don't need to prepare. I'll take notes. I would ask for permission to record the conversation so then I could like transcribe it or like have it so I wouldn't miss a single word. And then I would basically draft a profile for them. And then I would also spend a long time looking for scouring the internet for photos of their office space or their team members or like screenshots of I would like use their products and like make gifts from like demo, make up demos myself basically. And then I'd put together something really beautiful and say, can I publish this? Usually there'd be like back and forth with the copy. But then eventually they would say yes, because and then it'd probably take like at least 2 weeks per company, at least from like first contact to getting on the phone and then another week or so trying to get it actually up. So it was like, the answer is just straight up hustle. and grind. Like, people are going to say no, you're going to follow up. They're going to say no again. They're going to forget to respond. They're going to say, can you hit, like, reach out again in 4 weeks? And you just put in your calendar and remember to reach out in 4 weeks. And I think at some point, most people will respect the persistence, especially if they say, like, I am interested, just please help remind me. There's no real shortcut, I guess.
Yeah, that's true.
It's not glamorous by any means.
Well, no, but I think you did something really clever there, which I just want to kind of catch up on again, which is like, I think the shortcut there is almost putting in the extra work, because you said there are two things. Firstly, kind of onboarding people, you went and you got all of that information, you did all of the work for them to make it as easy for them as possible at the beginning.
Yeah.
And the thing I think a lot of people make a mistake of when they're doing referrals is, or they're asking for an intro, is to go to someone they know and say, hey, you're in tech, who do you know? Like, can you introduce me to a company that does this? And then they'll have to do all the work to think through people they know, think about whether they'd be a good fit.
Oh yeah, definitely do all the work for, yeah, you should always do all the work. Because in the beginning, like, the only value you have is your time. Like, yeah. Your site doesn't exist. It's not even launched. Even if it was launched, like, you probably have a very low traffic, like, no one's even seeing it. So yeah, and I think that in the beginning, I mean, I guess if I went back in time, I don't know, hindsight, 2020, right? But I was just going to say that, like, I would probably have also explained, like, what my launch process, like, what I was envisioning for my launch, saying that I was, like, going to do this. And if I think that I couldn't have guaranteed at the time that I was going to, you know, get launched on Hacker News or Product Hunt and, like, be on the front page or anything like that. There's no way I could have known that was going to happen. But at least, like, mentioning that I built this, like, here are the distribution channels that I'm planning to launch with, here's my strategy, like, at least some point in the middle, so that they would know that you're, like, they'd probably give you feedback, if anything. Yeah. Like, oh, yeah, I read Hacker News, this is what I think, you know. But I think that would have been more compelling. A lot of the companies that I'd reached out to before I launched, a lot of them ended up seeing it on Hacker News before, because, and they didn't actually follow up with me, and they're like, oh, is it too, like, they felt bad that they missed the train, you know. Yeah. And then I was just going to say, like, once you have some leverage, I think it's really important to not give anything completely for free. Something that I wish I had done is, maybe before I even launched, but after, definitely after I launched, is asking people for some, like, if you're going to give something for free, you should ask for something. So, like, I wish I'd asked all those companies that I was onboarding for free if they would promise to do a case study, or, like, if they'd offer to be a reference if someone else wanted to talk to an existing, you know, I don't know if you can call them customers because they weren't paying at the time. But just, like, I think that you are really providing a service. And once you kind of, you like, build up to being able to actually provide value that people recognize, like, you should be able to ask either for money or for some type of favor or something in return, which I didn't do. And I wish I did.
Yeah, that makes sense. But I think the first customers are always difficult anyway.
The first customers that I onboarded when they got it for free are definitely my least favorite. Well, not all of them, I shouldn't say that, but many of them are, like, really hard to work with because they don't actually appreciate the product. And this is why a lot of people give the advice of charging early, because customers that actually pay have skin in the game. They're much easier to work with. They want to see this through. And I think that's true, but if you're, yeah, I guess it kind of just depends on your circumstance and your product, whether or not you, like, what your process is. For me, for Key Values, for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, if you go to keyvalues.com, you see there's all these filters. And so I really did need more companies for it to be, like, interesting at all. I couldn't have launched with just three companies because there's, like, 45 filters. Like, it'd be sad. Most combinations would mean that zero companies match with you. So maybe I shot myself in the foot by starting with so many filters. If there's, like, indie hackers, I feel like could have launched with 5 companies or something. They're like, you know, 10 companies. But my goal is 50, and it took so long that I ended up launching with, like, 22 or something like that.
Okay. But now you have this awesome kind of flywheel effect where I think what I really like about Key Values is you're just so, and this is really weird for a marketplace as well, is you're so clearly aligned with everybody. So you're so clearly aligned with the companies. You're so clearly aligned with the developers. There's no real conflict there.
Yeah. And that makes me so happy that you say that.
So easy for those inbounds.
Yeah, no, I think that for me, the other part of sales is, like, it's hard to sell stuff that you, it is hard for me to sell anything unless I genuinely believe in it. And Key Values is, like, genuinely, there's no downside in my mind Unless you have like a really shitty culture, I guess. If it's like super toxic, if people are abused verbally every day, like maybe you wouldn't want to showcase that. But for the most part, like key values, really, there's no downside for having that. And so it makes it easy for me to believe in, like, I guess the first step of sales, like you have to really believe in what you're selling. And so anyways, I really appreciate you saying that. That makes me really happy.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's just something, I think it's something you've, it shows through that you obviously really care about the product and really care about, you know, everyone who's using it on both sides. And I think what's really interesting about it as well is that, you know, you, at no point are you really selling key values. Kind of when you do, you know, all this kind of stuff, you're not out there posting on Twitter about how amazing key values is. It's always, look how amazing this company is. And, or look how, you know, here's a way to look at all these cool companies, look at all the stuff they're doing. And other companies will see that and they will, like, what's the best way of putting it? Like, they will.
FOMO.
Sorry?
FOMO, like fear of missing out. They're like, I want that.
Yeah. I guess it's a good way of putting it. Yeah, FOMO.
That's actually funny. I hadn't realized that I don't think it was like a deliberate or like calculated messaging, but that is definitely how I feel in general. Like I think before I even started key values, when I discovered something that most people hadn't heard about, I just love being the one, I guess in the same vein as like Product Hunt, like the ethos behind Product Hunt. But like, yeah, when you discover something that's cool, you kind of want to tell everyone about it. And it's fun to be the person that recommends something new to a friend, or, you know what I mean? It's kind of cool, yeah, for someone to be like, oh, you're the first person that told me about this awesome thing that I now use every day. I like having that credit, I guess. And so, yeah, I just turned that into a company.
Yeah, but I think it's really powerful. I think people are doing that more and more. So it's, Product Hunt does that as well, right? People weren't sharing Product Hunt with friends on Twitter necessarily. They're sharing like either there or something cool they found on Product Hunt.
Yeah.
And that's just, then you discover it through that. And I think another one that's really good at that is Lambda School now as well.
Yes. Like,
my Twitter feed is full of Lambda, and very little of it is actually promoting Lambda directly. It's promoting a student who's working there, or a student who got an amazing job there, totally, or something like that.
In a weird way, I guess you're really just, you're like saying, they're like all case studies, right? You're like, yeah, here's a case study of something, like a success story, and people like hearing about that. And that's, yeah. And I think sales is changing also. Like, no, people don't respond well to like for jobs, people don't respond well, like, hey, need a job? As an engineer, you're constantly hearing things like, yeah, that. So if anything, your eyes glaze over when you have any type of, like, I legitimately, and I feel bad, but like, I don't even read all the recruiter emails I get on LinkedIn or in emails, because I just like already know what they are. So I think in general, people are kind of saturated hearing those types of plugs. And so, yeah, interesting. Lambda School is a really good example.
Yeah. But I think that's maybe a bit further in advance. I mean, it's a great like kind of advice for people to really make sure you're aligned with your customers anyway in the early days. But maybe that's a bit further ahead than most people listening to this will be.
Oh, yeah.
So at some point you decided, okay, it's time to go and charge for key values.
Yep.
And like you said, a lot of the people you already had on the platform, they'd been anchored kind of at a low value, or maybe just, you know, in their case, it just wasn't a priority, right? They hadn't, right, been primed for that. Which is, right, fine. I mean, it's going to happen to most people if you do it that way. There's nothing that you did, yeah, wrong. And you needed those people on the platform anyway. So like, I think that was totally the right decision to go that way.
Yep.
Speaking as someone who's been through that pain as well. but still, you had to go out, you had to find some customers. So can you take me through kind of step by step, be as painfully detailed as you want, how you got those first 2-3 paying customers?
Yeah. So I think the actual first customer I convinced was a company that actually hired someone directly through key values. That's easier, because most companies are used to paying like, you know, 25% first year salary or some like crazy placement fee. So I was charging something like $3,000 a year, something like really small. They're like, they almost laughed. And that was confusing, because then I was like, oh, maybe $3,000 a year is too little. And then anyone who's, you know, as I learned to start charging to new customers, $3,000 actually sounded like a lot to them, because they didn't have any guarantees. Sure. Also, like, you know, I probably got ballsy and mentioned, like, said it was like 5,000 or 10. I remember at one point I said 10,000, and one company was like, oh, they just like ghosted me. They like literally didn't even respond to any email after I said $10,000. And it was silly, because they were like a small startup. I didn't do enough like a lead qualification. I didn't understand. Yeah. I had no concept of like qualifying leads. And qualifying leads just means like when you have a lead, whether it's inbound or outbound, just like doing research or gauging how likely they are to pay a certain amount. And that might be like how many people they're hiring in my case, or like how much funding they've had, or how big they are. Are you talking to someone who actually has control over making purchases? You know, there's just like just doing your homework really. And I just had no concept of that. So I was just saying like random numbers to random companies without even considering that they might, like, I don't know. It sounds so stupid now looking back, but I just really was in my mind. I was like, okay, the next five companies that reach out, doesn't matter who they are. Like the first one, I'm going to say this, the second, like, and that's just so silly. So, so silly. But yeah, then the first, for a long time, what I was doing was anytime that a company reached out, I would send them this email that was essentially like, I could probably look it up, but it was something that was like key values props are X, Y, and Z. First, 1 year, you can pay $3,000 a year. For 6 months, you can do $1,800. Let me know if you have any questions and we can get started. Or something like...
Wait, something you sent like, that in an email?
I sent this in an email. And so
to a current customer? Sorry.
Oh, no. So for any time anyone would like reach out to join Key Values, like a new customer,
okay, got you.
I would reply with the same, basically this templated email. I would probably tailor it a little bit, but it was like the same email, same pricing, mm-hmm. same verbiage for that part. And some companies said yes. A lot ended up saying like either never replying or like I'd go back and forth on email. And in those cases, you know, actually those are like whatever. But the point is that I really didn't like genuinely didn't understand that you can't send the same templated email to every customer because they're totally different. Like I didn't account for whether a founder was reaching out to me versus a technical recruiter. In some cases, mm-hmm. it wasn't even a full-time employee for that company. It was like someone that they hired third party as a sourcer who reached out because they thought, you know, they didn't know if it was free. If it was free, why not, right? I hadn't considered like how many roles they were hiring for or like where they were based or like I really just was very naive and didn't understand that you should have different messaging. And I probably did this for like 5 months. Like a long time just with the same templated email. Mm-hmm. And then I met someone who I call him my sales guru, Danny, and he walked, like, I just met him through a friend. It was very casual. And at some point I was like, oh, like, can I pay you some hourly rate? And he was like, oh, I've never done that before. And so we like picked some very generous number. Cause I was just like, I'm just gonna talk to you for like 2 or 3 hours. I'll pay you mm-hmm. anything for your advice. And he sat down and walked him through all of my emails and like every very, very painfully through. He read every single email in exchange.
Sure.
And he was like, really, he was like, could not believe what I was doing because it made no sense to him. Mm-hmm. And he basically suggested that when someone reaches out, that I suggest that we jump on a call, which
yeah,
is
there we go.
I won't say that anymore, but just like we should hop on a call, just schedule some time to chat. Or whatever it is, but just basically like talk to them on a call before I mentioned pricing. And I thought that was so wild at the time, but this is actually a great idea because for most people, especially if you're charging, if you're B2B or enterprise for sure, your product is probably not going to sell itself. It's not. And if you want to close bigger deals, like you're going to have to explain what exactly your service or product does and sell it. Yeah. So jumping on calls was really foreign to me. And it was also, there's definitely a couple of months me figuring out that process. Cause it was like, I was awkward. I was nervous. I was doing mm-hmm. these face-to-face video calls and like, I don't know, they would seem like, I just felt, it was just nerve wracking. But yeah, eventually I got to the process that I'm still basically using today and tweaking like minor tweaks here and there. Okay. But the process now is that when someone reaches out, it's inbound, I send a very short email that says like, let's schedule some time to meet. And it's like 25 minutes, 30 minute call. And then when we talk, I do some research, but very minimal actually, beyond just seeing like how many roles they're hiring for, if they're using like, you know, what their tech stack is and also just like what their ATS is, which is an applicant tracking system.
Yeah.
Most people are familiar with like Lever or Greenhouse. And then, yeah, I basically spend the first 10 minutes asking them to like give me information about their company, their team, like how hiring has been. And it really helps me just know then what to pitch. Because I think for most people there, especially when you're early, you have multiple value props and you're not sure which one is like the most compelling. And the answer is for most people that there are probably more than one and mm-hmm. it kind of depends on the use case. And so I think what I was doing, failing to do before with my emails was that I was just like listing all of the potential use cases, hoping that one of them would resonate with the person reading them. Yeah. But that's silly because for a lot of people, like for example, so I'll use really concrete examples. So for key values, it's really helpful for small companies because they don't have much of an online presence. They don't have any, if you're a 5-person team, you don't have an active engineering blog. You probably don't have, like if you Google your company name, you're probably not the top 10 search results yet. You know what I mean? So I think for smaller companies, it's like the actual content about their business is super valuable. And the fact that it's hosted on this third party site is like, it's social proof. It's validating.
It's discovery basically, I guess.
Yeah. It's like really like if you do, and even some bigger companies, if you Google their company name, like their key values profile shows up in their like top 5 search results, which is great, you know? And that's content not only that is really quality, but it's content that they can control. Like they have the say over it, you know?
Yeah.
But this is totally like worthless to a bigger company, like, you know, like Coinbase. Coinbase is like, everyone knows who we are. We don't need this. Like that's not for them. So there's no point for me trying to pitch that to them because it's just not what resonates. It does not their pain point. Coinbase though does care about hiring diverse candidates, and you know they like want to get in front of a broader audience, and so that's more important to them. And so then, anyways, in this first 10 minutes of a call, if people explain to you like what their pain points are, what they're focusing on, what they're struggling with, then you know what to pitch to them. And I think that was like a huge breakthrough.
That makes sense. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think what I wanted to get into more with you then, because you're not doing too much outbound, I don't think too many people will be in that kind of space where they're getting inbound stuff coming in much.
I think that in that case, it's really just intros. And with outbound, I think that this is something that I actually was just chatting with someone else on Indie Hackers is first finding like researching the right person that you want to talk to. And then just kind of finding, I like to do these backdoor ways. Like I don't think the sales email is that interesting, but if you just send an email to like, you know, so for me, it's like, if I just send an email to a technical recruiter as an engineer, I can say like, hey, I'm an engineer. I'm not looking for jobs, but I actually think that I can help you reach other engineers. Like, can we just quickly chat for 15 minutes? And most of them will say yes. And then you can kind of, once you're on the phone, it's much easier than emails. And if you can meet someone in person, like if you can go to a meetup or there's like a hackathon or there's something where you can talk to people in person, it's much easier. And so you don't even need to have lots of friends that you know at these companies, but you can definitely meet people. And if they're not the right person, if they like what they hear, they think there's some need, they'll make an intro, and that's always going to get you one foot in the door. And that's like, it basically at that point then is kind of like a lukewarm inbound lead. Because someone recommended you to, or their, your service or product to the person, the point person. And so that's, you have like this kind of, I don't know. It's not just a cold email at that point.
Yeah. The trust's already there. I mean, someone's put their kind of reputation on the line a bit.
And again, there's like, that sounds like a lot of work. You're like, oh man, I got to like go to events or, you know, like, and there's a company that you really want to close. A lot of bigger companies, at least they host events. Like they have like go to their office, like meet 10 of their employees and chat with them. And I think in general, it's like you have to do things that really don't scale in the beginning. But once you have this company as a customer, like that makes it a lot easier for you to get your second customer because you like have some reputable, you know, you have this logo on your site or like this case study or example. Then eventually you pick up some momentum.
Yeah. I think that's something that's really interesting as well. And I like that you have that kind of, you know, hovering around like the $3,000 a year mark, because I think what a lot of people don't realize is that whether you're going to charge $300 or $3,000 a year, you're going to have to do the same work anyway. And you can justify that at $3,000, but at $300, you probably can't.
Yeah. And I was just going to say you can definitely charge more. I mean, well, it really depends obviously on what your product is, but in general, it helps to start saying a higher number, and you can always come down, but then ask for things. So like for a lot for key values, this has like never been an issue because obviously the whole reason a company's on key values is to like promote themselves. Mm-hmm. But there are a lot of products where the companies don't want you to use their logo, and that obviously really helps you to be able to list their logo because it's social proof.
Yeah.
So maybe one of the things you say is like, I'll give you a discount, but you have to like in return, you let me list you as a customer, like use your logo on our you know, or sales calls, or like if you have a pitch deck of some kind, like you can list their logo. So it's just like an idea of like, you can always charge more, not even intending to actually charge that much, but be able to come down and then ask for things.
Yeah, that makes sense. I had Stephanie saying last week as well about how for her, she does really big enterprise deals, more like the 50K plus. And she was saying how they have like someone in the department basically whose job it is to get a discount. And they don't really mind kind of what the end price is. It's just they have to have a discount.
That is their job.
Their own personal,
for sure.
So, yeah.
Yeah. Enterprise is fun because you live, because for even for like some bigger companies, like businesses, there's someone whose job is to literally spend money. And so the game is definitely different. Yeah. Advice for that is different. I've definitely talked to some much bigger companies and I had to really navigate that. Like I'm still learning that as well. Like the whole procurement process, it's just very different. Like you have to have an executive, I have like this executive summary now that took me forever to make because I really don't like making pitch decks. I've like avoided it at all costs. But yeah, like anyways, I think it just depends. And I think the most important thing with sales is just understanding who you're selling to and like not, and I'm not saying that loosely, like, oh, understand like what the company does. It's like really understand the person, what their job is, what their role is, who they report to, like what are they asking for? How much, like how much breadth do they have to make these types of decisions? Like, and like really talking to their pain point.
I think that's important. A lot of people, they're worried kind of to ask those kind of questions, but you have to kind of think about it as well. Like you're taking their time up. If you don't ask these questions at the beginning, then you're just wasting their time as well.
For
like, you're not doing anyone any favors by just hoping that they can make that purchasing decision.
Yeah. And I was just going to say like now, like if you just, if even for me to ask you like what you're working on, like what's the hardest part about doing podcasts? Most people like actually kind of like talking about what they're struggling with, especially if they think you're going to be able to solve it. So, yeah, I think people are really happy to talk about what the pain point is. And so, yeah, especially when you're early on, I think making that helps to guide that conversation. If you're like, what's hard about engineering is very vague. Like you're not going to get the information, but if it's like, you know, there's specific, I don't know, I'm like making up some product in my mind right now, but it's like, if you're like, oh, how is like, are there any holes in the communication process or the way that you collaborate? Are there any times where people work on the wrong thing? Or, you know, like, you know, like provide some examples that they could run with. But people are usually happy to talk about their, what's hard for them. I don't know why that is. Is that just like human nature?
Yeah, I think so. I think, who knows? It seems to work everywhere though, right? It's like just like kind of that opening, just how's business? It's just, it works with a hairdresser. It works with anybody.
Yeah. And it's just like, what's hard? How can I help? Is really kind of the premise, like how you start the call. It's like, what sucks for you? What's the worst thing about your job? And like, maybe I can literally make that go away for you. So tell me about it. And then people will.
But I think that's something that's really important for sales that people don't do enough. And I think that's something that just instinctively from talking to you for a few times, I'm sure you just have that down kind of straight away, whereas other people need to learn. It's just, we're a team, right? So we are on a call and we're aligned, our values, we're working towards the same goal, and we are a team. We are going to get there for you.
I think that, I was just going to say in general, that's true. That is just kind of me with like everything. I think like symbiotic, mutually beneficial symbiotic relationships are the funnest ones because literally everyone wins. And so there's no, like, you don't have to sell anything. It's like, you know, it's obvious to me and it's obvious, it should be obvious to you. So I guess it's an easier pitch, but I was just going to say that for people who are like nervous, you can almost think about sales as just a way, as an excuse to talk to customers and do research. I think if you're like nervous about actually closing customers, which I was for a long time, I'll be honest, like I would be like, my heart would be racing and I'd have to like pace myself to not just blurt out random words. Cause when I'm nervous, I just say a bunch of random things. But it's really just like, you kind of just want to understand who you're building for. Like it's, you don't know if you have product market fit yet. You don't know what direction. You probably have like 10 ideas on the table, like features or like directions to go. And if you like talk to the people who may potentially be your customers to help guide you, and that will really inform you. I can't even like really emphasize enough how much I've learned about my own product from doing sales. Like people telling me what their pain points are and like how they think they could use key values has sometimes been like, I'm like, oh my God, I literally hadn't even considered that as an option for what the value could be. And so it's really, really helpful. Even if you don't close a customer, it's like you learn, it's like, it's still a win-win for you because you learn more about who you're building for and what you should do next.
Yeah. So that's something I really want to get into before we finish, which is, I think that's like one of those parts that people don't necessarily talk about enough in the early days, which is you've been on one of these calls. It's a perfect fit. You solve these pain points for let's say it's a smaller company, a startup who are looking for discovery. They're looking for people to find out about them. They really want to be on key values, and you have that call, and okay, 10 minutes later, there's money in your bank and everything's great, right? No, I mean, so what happens? Like, kind of, you know, for someone like who's going to make their first ever sale, you're in that call, and at some point you have to go from being in that call to then being a customer who's paid. As easy as people hope it's going to be. And I think you lose, like a lot of people lose a lot of people who would otherwise become customers by just kind of waiting for them and expecting, oh yeah, I'm sure they're going to send me like an email saying we'd like to pay now.
Yes. You're so funny. When you said that, I was like, yeah, that sounds great. I love that. Everything. Yeah. It doesn't really happen that way. I always follow up with a summary email, like 15 mm-hmm. minutes after the call. And that kind of just summarizes all the talking points. You should assume that they didn't take any notes, but based on what they responded to, you can like tailor this follow-up email also. Something that I've gotten better about now is like in the call, I will ask, I'll say like next steps for me is I will send a follow-up email. Mm-hmm. What is the expected timeline? Like, who do you need to talk to? When do you think I'll hear from you next? Sometimes I'll even be very blunt and ask like, do you have the ability to make this purchase yourself, or do you have to get buy-in from someone else? Like, I will literally ask like, who is the person that gets to make this decision? Which I was shy about asking in the beginning, because I don't know, in my mind I was like, is that offensive to assume that they don't have buying power? But no, like just ask the questions, and it's basically just figuring out what to do next. But yeah, I always send up a follow email, and I always in the call tell them that I'm going to send that so they can look out for that. And then I always also get a sense of like what the timeline is on their end. And this is always really helpful too, because sometimes they're like, truthfully, we have like an offsite soon and we have this big push. So it probably won't, like, this probably won't be top of mind until another month. And that just helps me know what to expect.
Yeah. And that's great. And I mean, I think that does two really clever things as well. Like, one of them is it sets them kind of rolling along that train line of they're going to get to the end goal, and you know, they're on this process, and they have kind of, they've told you kind of what they think the, like what they think the process is going to look like, how long it's going to take.
And it's also just every company.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. And also something that I really like you doing that is that you're sending, like, I think a lot of times they may have to go and get buy-in, or there may be someone else on the team they'll talk to, and they might not do as good a job as you did of explaining why they should go with key values. So having that in black and white there, kind of, look, this is what we're doing to work together to get to those goals. That's really important.
Yeah. And I was just going to say, sometimes for like bigger companies, what I do is like, I say this very outright. I'm like, they love it. They're my champion. I just kind of assume that they're my champion. And I say very directly, like, what do you need? What materials do you need that I can provide for you that you can go like make a case for this? A lot of times, at bigger companies, they need to write a proposal. I'm like, I'm happy to write that proposal for you. And so I just kind of give them all the things that they need. And I also always say, like, if you want me to jump on a call with you and your supervisor or your manager or whoever, like, I'm happy to give you more time.
Can you give us a really quick idea of, say, today is day zero, and today is day zero. So it's you know,
day zero.
Start the clock now.
Yes.
And an inbound lead comes in, someone saying, hey, we're interested in key values. Just like the steps. So is that like, there's an email, there's a call, what happens next?
Yeah, they send an email in. I send a very short email back I use Mixmax. This is like so funny. I'm like plugging Mixmax. But I use Mixmax for scheduling because it's really easy. I show them a calendar right away of all my availability so that you don't want back and forth in general. So then they just book time on my calendar. When we jump on a call, as I said, I mean, there's of course edge cases for what happens next year, but typically I say, I'm going to send you a follow-up email and won't wait to hear back. So I send them a follow-up email after our call. And then this is like, I don't know, things are very different. Sometimes people respond with like, great, what are next steps? And sometimes it's like, you know, there's more back and forth for days or weeks or even sometimes months because they have who knows what's ahead. But yeah, for people who say like, let's do this, next steps. The thing that this part also took me some time, some finessing, is that you want to send do, again, all the work. So I will send them an invoice. I will send them a contract. The contract only requires their signature. Like I look up their legal entity name. I look up their address. I put in all the, you know, like I just, I don't ask for any other fields other than the signature and sign date. And I use HelloSign so that the counter signature is really easy. Mm-hmm. Again, there was a time in the beginning where I was like sending PDFs and someone saw this and they're like, oh my God, this hurts my soul. Like, don't make people download a PDF and like sign in. Like, please use like HelloSign or DocuSign or something like that. Mm-hmm. So I fixed that. And then, yeah, the next steps, of course, of like, how do I start helping you in providing the service? So the next email after someone says yes, I have like a follow-up email that has an invoice, contract, and next steps. And just to get the ball rolling right away.
That's awesome. So let's say like on average for a smaller company, a smaller customer, from the inbound email coming in to them being paid up and on the platform or signed and on the platform, how long does it take on average? Like what can someone expect kind of if they're selling a similarly priced product to the same kind of customers?
I don't think it depends on the price, to be honest. For a smaller company, it's actually, it should be faster. Actually, because it's like literally a founder using their credit card. It's like they don't have a payments team. They don't have, so it's actually much faster. For me, what's slow is the actual content creation part. And that's probably more specific to my actual product. But in terms of like the actual decision to buy, that can be anything. I've had people reach out from like 6 months ago and they're like, hey, we're ready now. And I'm like, whoa, you're alive. I didn't even, like, I forgot about you because you had ghosted me and didn't respond to my last five emails. So I think like, definitely be patient with the bigger the deal size. I think actually you're right. Maybe it does take longer just in thought, but the actual like paperwork and process usually goes faster with smaller companies. For bigger companies, like it can definitely take a long time. I'm not going to name any names, but there was one company that I recently published their profile on Key Values and we literally, they said yes, like 8 months ago, And it has just taken forever because they needed like marketing to be involved and legal to be involved. We had lots of back and forth with the contract. It's like eight months took forever. Mm-hmm. Like ridiculous. That's by far the longest it's ever taken. But now I know that I have that ceiling. Like that's the range, upper bound of the range.
Fair enough. So I want to wrap up with a couple of kind of actionable points for people who are listening who are maybe starting off on their own sales journey. Let's say I'm a new founder. I'm just starting my first business. It's a B2B business. What's one thing I should go away and do today?
You should reach out to a customer. You should find out, like, identify one company that you'd like to sell to. Make a list even, and then do your homework. Find out if you know anyone from there. If you don't, like, find out the exact person that you want to talk to. Do research on them. Like, maybe they went to the same school as you. Maybe they, like, have some mutual connection. Go on LinkedIn. Maybe some strange thing, like maybe they're in the same like club interest, like maybe they played badminton in college and you're like, I play badminton and you're like, whatever it is, like find some common connection there. And then, yeah, I think just tailor an email and set a schedule to follow up like once a week or something. And just, yeah, but, like reach out to someone right now.
That's good advice. And so, okay, next one. So I'm a founder. This time I've got a few customers. And I'm at that point where I want to take it kind of to the next level. I want to turn this into a real business. What's one thing I should go away and do as someone at that kind of, you know, like maybe at like $3,000-$4,000 a month kind of level?
Yeah. I mean, you could, for that, I would say like just streamline some of the processes. Maybe you could start doing that or thinking about that at least. I think at that point, actually, it's just still keep doing what you're doing. At 3 to 5 customers. I mean, I guess it depends how big the deals are, but
yeah, sure. Maybe, I mean, is there like, maybe there's something you think I should go away and read? Is there like, it could be anything, right? There's like a tool you might think I should, like something I should start maybe automating that I didn't do before. Maybe something that you did at that time where you're like, oh yeah, this is becoming too much work.
Actually something at that stage, it depends. So I think just understanding, how much you have to do. So I think for some small, like depending on your customer, depending on what you're selling, depending on what the price point, you might not have to do a video call. Maybe you could just do a shorter phone call. Maybe you can actually just do it over email. If you want to charge more, maybe actually a video call is not sufficient. Maybe you have to go in person and do a demo. I think actually in the beginning, it's good to just experiment with like how much or how little you can, mm-hmm. you can do, and like whether or not that impacts how much you can charge. If you can close fewer companies at a higher price point, like maybe that's the way to go. And that will probably require you to do more work as well. Like I know that for some of like my friends who are founders also, like they do really big deals. And at this point they're thinking of ways to like say thank you when someone mm-hmm. closes, like they send them like a custom mug and like, they're like really like, it's like a bougie thing, right? Yeah. They like send them a thank you card and like a box of like donuts or something. I don't know. Mm-hmm. and they'll send them to their desk as a thank you. And I think this like happens the bigger the customer is, and I don't know. So I think there's just like experimenting with how, like you have to do more high touch the bigger the deal is.
Yeah, that makes sense.
As a general rule.
Yeah, no, I think, I know the earlier you are as well, right? The more you learn, the earlier you are, and then you can start kind of automating that to a certain extent, or you kind of, you'll know what problems will come up before you kind of encounter them.
Yeah, yeah.
As you go along. So where can people go and find out more about you, about Key Values, about what you're up to?
Yeah, they can subscribe to my newsletter, which is like mostly me, you know, introducing new companies and new teams that I'm working with. But I also include a lot of updates and the behind the scenes of like what it's like being a solo founder for Key Values. Mm-hmm. You can definitely check out both my Twitter account. You can follow me on Twitter. My DMs are open. And yeah, and also you can email me if you have like specific questions. I mean, this is kind of what spurred this, our meeting today, but I also just had a podcast come out on Indie Hackers, which was a super long, long episode, but I definitely talk a lot about my story and my journey building Key Values.
Thank you so much. I don't want to take up any more of your time. I know you have to rush off. So
oh no, yeah, this is fun. This is
yeah,
fun.
This is awesome. Yeah. Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
Have a great day.
Bye.
That's it for this episode of the Sales for Founders podcast. We'll be back next week with another interview, finding out how amazing founders acquire their first customers and grow profitable businesses by doing sales. If you're a founder and you're struggling to come up with a product that people want to buy, or maybe you just need a bit of help finding your first customers, then you should head on over to salesforfounders.com. Thanks for listening. Thank you.